Hello and welcome to another episode of the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. My name is Ali Mwakaneno. I'll be your host today. Today we'll talk to Maxwell Okello, the CEO of the American Chambers of Commerce. Maxwell and I will discuss the free trade agreement between Kenya and the US and how it affects local businesses. Maxwell will also share how the FTA will take over from AGOA, which expires in 2025.
We understand that the trade between Kenya and the US is very important. And what do you think are the current milestones so far in the bilateral trade between these two countries?
In terms of milestones, when it comes to the US-Kenya commercial relationship, there's a lot that can be said, and I'll just highlight a couple for the benefit of this interview. So currently, according to a recent report by Aid Data, the US delivers to Kenya an estimated $3 billion per year in terms of benefits. And these are both commercially and also soft, some of the, what you'd call the social engagement type of benefits. Now, out of that $3 billion annually, roughly about $1 billion comes from foreign aid. And when you think about that, that's significant, given the fact that Kenya's GDP is roughly maybe $99 billion to 2019. So if you're talking about 3 billion shillings coming from commercial and other forms of engagement between Kenya and the US, then that's really significant. And the other engagements would be, you know, around security, peace building, and so on. Now, over the last two decades, according to the same report, Kenya has increased its export revenues to the United States by over 285%. So last year, the two-way trade between Kenya and the US actually crossed the billion mark, standing at 1.1 billion, making the US the third third ranking export destination for Kenya. Behind, I believe, Uganda and could be India, if I'm not wrong. Now, from a commercial, purely commercial perspective, American companies invest have invested $300 million in Kenya's economy and created over 1,000 jobs each year since 2015, which again is a very significant, finding from that specific report. And of course, the other milestones are tourism. The US is currently the largest source destination outside of East Africa for tourists, accounting for $190 million, roughly, in revenues, annual revenues to Kenya. The other thing as well is diaspora remittances. In 2019, the total was about $2.5 billion that came in from the diaspora. The majority of this actually comes from the US, where I think we have several tens of thousands of Kenyans living there. And of course, you know that the US is the leading funder when it comes to HIV/AIDS related programs in Kenya. So again, a bit softer, more on the development side, but significant nonetheless. So the milestones have been great. We've seen Kenya's relationship with the US being elevated to one of a strategic partnership, as opposed to just your normal relationship. And that what that means is that Kenya is now being seen as integral to US's plans when it comes to the engagement with Africa. And out of that elevation of that a strategic bilateral partner is how we've arrived at where we are with this trade negotiation, which came out of what they called the Trade and Investment Working Group that was formed as part of that process of engaging with Kenya strategically. And one of the recommendations was to explore a potential trade agreement with the US, free trade agreement with the US. And here we are. So those are some of the milestones that I think I can highlight as of now.
Thank you so much. And I'm actually happy that you talked about the amount of aid Kenya receives from the US. And what do you think might have brought the two nations to a decision where they decided to move from aid to trade now that the aid relationship was already working?
Yeah, I think that's simply a policy change, and it's not anything that is unique to the US. It's a global movement right now. That whole shift from just providing aid to developing countries to one where you're looking at a much more sustainable model that is commercial driven or private sector driven. And then the US is at the forefront of championing that. They even talk about journey to self-reliance, which, you know, for me is music to my ears, because at the end of the day, we want to be self-reliant, and we know we can be self-reliant. Yes, we do need support in the process, and that's where your bilateral and multilateral partners come into play. But at the end of the day, the whole idea is to support as opposed to it becoming your lifeline. And so if you take that and then locate it in the context of the free trade negotiations that we're going through, you know, that's really it. It's about the US and Kenya providing a platform, if I may call it that, that allows for unfettered trade to happen, trade and investment to carry on between the two countries, that would then create that economic growth and the transformation that we are looking for our country, but also for the US as well. They may be a superpower, but at the end of the day, every country wants to grow. Every country wants to create opportunities for its citizens. And that's why then this transition you're seeing is something that, you know, is important and is critical for both countries.
Thank you so much on that. And in light of current events, I think it's impossible to have a conversation on trade without talking about the COVID-19 pandemic. How do you think that has or is shaping bilateral trade between Kenya and the US right now, given the difference, rather the superiority of the US in industry and especially healthcare? And how do you think that will affect the negotiations in the FTA?
Yeah, that's a critical question. And, you know, a question that will always, the answers to it will always keep evolving. I don't think anyone can provide substantive or conclusive answers to that or feedback to that. However, there is what we know and what we are seeing currently. So if we take it from a trade perspective, some of the data that we're seeing is that, you know, the trade has obviously been impacted negatively. And this is across the board, not just with the US. However, we know that April seemed to have faced some severe disruption. Mainly, that was the height when, you know, your airlines just shut down, and of course demand collapsed across various sectors. You know, we have businesses such as PVH who manufacture out of EPZ from Athi River. And they literally had to pivot and repurpose their manufacturing to PPEs and masks, because the demand for apparel in the US had just collapsed completely. So that gives you the sort of gives you a sense of what the impact of COVID is. You know, if you look at the flower market, for example, we know was severely affected and actually had to, were facing losses of about 250 million from the estimates that they gave daily. So this is definitely, the COVID situation is definitely, has some severe impact when it comes to the whole aspect of trade. And not only that, there's also the impact on value chains and supply chains, the inability to be able to move goods in and out as efficiently as they were being able to move before, becomes a problem. The other aspect as well is, you know, the US is one of the big source markets for secondhand clothing. And, you know, the suspension of imports has severely affected, you know, your small mitumba traders and others who rely on mitumba trade. And I know it's one of those things that currently is high on the agenda to see how that can be restarted. But one can understand why, you know, it was put on hold. Now, how is this going to shape the negotiations, as you asked? I think one of the very interesting things that is coming out of this is globally, there's been a realization that you cannot rely too much on or concentrate your sourcing too much in one place. China was the, or has been for a very long time, the world's manufacturer. And the moment China was locked down and you could not get your, you know, your supplies and everything from there, the entire world literally ground to a standstill. And so this has created an opportunity for countries such as Kenya to position themselves, to take advantage of this opportunity that has been created by companies now starting to look at other potential you know, countries where they can locate their manufacturing. So there's actually an opportunity for Kenya to have some of these businesses come and relocate their manufacturing here going forward. Then secondly, the FTA has also added or created an impetus the COVID situation has created an impetus for the FTA. I think the fact that we will need to recover as Kenya, the US needs to recover. And so where is that economic recovery going to come from? I think an instrument such as the FTA then opens up those possibilities and makes it easier for you know, commercial engagement to happen and increase in the way that we'd like. And then of course, a much more softer and direct impact of COVID on the FTA is the fact that, you know, the two governments have been trying to figure out how do they move forward the negotiations despite COVID. And you know, such negotiations are really tough. You want to be sitting across the table and really, you know, sensing body language, being able to, you know, get the energy of your colleagues on the other side or your counterparts on the other side. And, you know, rather than wait, they've decided, fine, you know, let's at least start virtually, see what we can do, get some alignment, and then hopefully as things open up later, there will definitely need to be those face-to-face engagements. Thank you.
I love the point on how you talked about the deglobalization of supply chains and just diversifying resources. And just to move forward, from a pessimistic point of view, either we find a vaccine sooner or we just develop a new normal. And in that line, how do you think different companies between Kenya and the US can work together to enhance trade post-COVID, if you will?
Yeah. Is there really a post-COVID situation? I think that, you know, we will live in this space for a while. It is really incumbent on us as both individuals and businesses to adapt, see how we can make, you know, the best use of the situation that we're finding ourselves in. But specifically to your question, there are various ways of looking at this. Remember, when you're talking about Kenya and the US from a commercial perspective, you're talking about business. You're talking about businesses looking at opportunities to engage and create value despite the environment that they find themselves in. So I've given an example of PVH. And them engaging now in, at least for this period, until demand rises in the US, in providing PPE equipment, manufacturing and distributing PPE be equipment, not just for Kenya, but actually for the region. Now, who are their suppliers? Yeah, it's mainly local supply chains that have been developed out of this crisis to provide the various materials that go into the production of this, including the distribution networks that previously may not have been obvious, but now have come into sharp focus to ensure that you're able to get your masks and get your PPE equipment to the, you know, farthest corners of the country and in the region. So that aspect of diversification of supply chains, both inbound and outbound, is something that I think we're bound to see quite a bit of scaling up. Then secondly, partnerships, and especially at SME level, where you know, SMEs from both countries, SMEs in the US that are starting to look beyond their own environment, they're trying to see where are other opportunities. How do we, you know, reduce the risk that you know, a pandemic such as COVID or any other shock that might come in the future within their own local market, how do they reduce that? It would mean diversifying their geographies, where they trade and how they you know, where they distribute to and where they invest. And so that then presents a good opportunity for our own SMEs as well, to be able to have these American counterparts that they can jointly create value with. And then of course, you know, other aspects like you know, the knowledge and technology transfer, we've all really adopted to technology. If you look at most of the technology in use, it is actually American technology. And so the fact that technology is becoming center stage and the digital economy is really the future of this world, then there is an opportunity there, given Kenya's own status as a technology leader in Africa, to really step up and you know, make sure that we are riding the right partnerships, the right engagements, to really make sure that we are trailblazing this space, not just for Kenya, but for the region and the rest of Africa. And then the other aspect as well is, you know, capital flows, investment. We see those as definitely opportunities that will come post-COVID as you know, companies look at recovering. And they're looking at where can we get the best returns? Investors, PE funds, venture capital funds, where do we get the best returns? Of course, the best returns are still in our region and not necessarily in the US or Europe. So those would be some of the things that I see. Of course, from a government perspective, we know the US has announced that it will provide 2.8 billion shillings, about 27.8 million. To ensure that you know, small businesses can stay afloat, support the agriculture sector, and so on, which I think is great, because the support will be required. Now, how they intend to do this, still not very clear at this point in time. And you've also heard the Kenya government talk about a credit guarantee scheme as well. So there's still a bit of nuts and bolts that needs to be put into some of this support, and we wait to see what that will look like. But I believe that the private sector by itself should be able to drive how they want to engage and how they can support each other to recover and rebound post-COVID.
Thank you so much for that, Maxwell. I want us to talk about a little bit more on the FTA right now. Mm-hmm. Currently, Kenya is trading under the AGOA, which is due to expire in 2025 and transition to the FTA. What do you think are the successes of AGOA, and how will the FTA enhance and sustain them?
Yeah, AGOA has done well for Kenya in my view, or in our view. Actually 70%, if not more, of the trade between US and Kenya is actually under the AGOA trade regime. And this is a mix of textiles and apparel, you know, which is within itself contributes about 70% of that trade. Then we have, you know, your nuts, coffee, tea as well. It's smaller, other smaller, you know, the products that have contributed to about, I think last year could have been about 56 million, a billion rather, if I'm not wrong, 56 billion worth of trade to the US. So the fact that AGOA is coming to an end, and the preferences that it had, the FTA is really looking at an AGOA plus, if I may put it that way, arrangement. Now, why the FTA and not necessarily an extension of AGOA? You see, the very fact that AGOA is coming to an end is in itself a problem. Yeah, because AGOA, as a trade preferential agreement, is time bound. It's been extended, I think, twice or thrice, but it is time bound. Now, both countries are looking at something that is much more predictable, something that is a lot more long-term, and hence the FTA. And so the FTA then creates this long-term, rules-based way to engage commercially between the two countries, and then players and actors between the two countries, that then drives long-term economic growth and transformation. If you look at the balance of trade, it's currently fairly balanced. In fact, in certain instances, it's said that Kenya has a surplus of trade with the US, and that the FTA should really enhance that. And if you're looking at the FTA, remember, for us as AmCham, we tend to look at it from both perspectives. There's what it could potentially do in terms of enhancing trade and investment from inbound from the US, and what it can do in terms of expanding exports and maybe even investment into the US market. Because who says that, you know, let me just pick any company, for example, there's nothing stopping Bidco under the FTA going and setting up in the US, or at least, you know, selling some of its products if it makes sense into the US market. There's nothing stopping our smaller, you know, think of that light industry in Kariobangi, who may be having a unique product that's been largely sold here, but now might have an opportunity to actually sell into the bigger US market. So the FTA provides that long-term predictability that business would be looking for. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is such an exciting opportunity and an historic one for Kenya. And perhaps I should also add one more perspective to this, and maybe just a little bit of an aside, but still related to the same conversation. This Kenyan FTA is not so much about just Kenya. It is about the region and Africa. And I'm sure you guys have heard, the president is on record severally talking about Kenya being the trailblazer that will set the standard for how the US will engage with not just East Africa as a region, but also the rest of Africa under the Continental Free Trade Agreement. Now, that also means, in effect, that there's an opportunity for other countries to come in and use this instrument to engage with markets in the US. So I'll give an example that I've had, that the Singaporeans are very, very keen, the Koreans are very, very keen to set up factories here that would be able to provide, or it's almost like manufacturing, but would be able to produce, that's the right term, be able to produce food that is frozen, shipped overnight to the US using our direct flights to New York. And the following day or the following morning, since that flight arrives in the morning, that food can actually be distributed into restaurants and served. So I think, for us, we really need to be very creative and very imaginative in the way that we look at this and not look at it myopically, because there is a big opportunity here, and that this opportunity now will be long term. It will not be for a fixed period of time, even to relate it back to AGOA.
Thank you so much. And I'm happy you brought the fact that FTA will act as a blueprint for trade agreements between other African countries, because then again, there are questions regarding how the FTA would affect local arrangements. So how would the FTA stay side by side with the Africa Trade Agreement and with other common trade policies within the EAC?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has come up severally, and actually the answers to that are pretty straightforward and simple. If you look at the East Africa Community Customs Union and some of the rules and guidelines in there, there is nothing legally stopping any of the member states from engaging in bilateral negotiations and actually bilateral agreements with other states outside of the EAC. And the same principle applies to the Continental Free Trade Agreement as well. Now, both treaties give that allowance as long as the benefits are bound to accrue to the rest of the parties within that trade, you know, the trading bloc or that union. So EAC actually stands to benefit with the work that Kenya is doing on this trade agreement. And remember also, the US, in terms of just a market or a region, is looking at Kenya as a hub for the East African region. And so, in my view, what Kenya is doing is actually complementary to EAC, to Continental Free Trade Area. And, you know, you've used a really nice word or term there. Kenya's providing the blueprint for how this, the rest of these blocks or countries represented in those blocks then will be able to engage with the US. On a call that the president, our president featured on and had the president of Ghana. The president of Ghana, I think it's called Nana, yeah, was actually congratulating the president and urging him on and telling him this is something that is really good and this is something that I believe that would accrue benefits to the rest of us. You lead the way. The rest of us are behind you and we will support you in this process. We also know that Kenya's specific issue was discussed at AU and they gave Kenya a go ahead to engage the US in these negotiations. So short answer is that this is complementary, and if you read the objectives that Kenya put out, which is a public document, and that if you don't have it, we can share it with you. One of the key things that they put there is that whatever agreement that they negotiate with the US will and should pay fidelity to the regional arrangements that they have at EAC level and as well as with the continental free trade area. So, you know, that's what I would say, and I hope that addresses the question.
It does, and thank you. Thank you for the clarification on the AU permission. I think that is one of the things that has been really missing. Yeah. As we finalize, I want to go to AmCham itself. And how would you guys just make sure that Kenyan businesses and Kenya investment opportunities get the limelight from the US and the reverse for them too?
Yeah. That's a fantastic question. And it's a question that you know, we are currently, you know, really doubling down on. To figure out, you know, what would be the most effective and efficient way of making sure that this actually does translate into tangible benefit. You know, when pen is put to paper and sort of the dust settles down, that actually the needle is being moved it just doesn't become a nice story that, you know, we were happy and, you know, there's bells and whistles around it, but the transformation that we're looking for doesn't happen. So there are a couple of things that as AmCham, we are focusing on. One of our core mandates is actually trade and investment. And under trade and investment, what we do is direct promotion of opportunities, both in Kenya and in the US. So we've had forums in the US where we engage with the private sector there and literally pitch Kenya as an investment destination and showcase together with government, because we do this together with the Kenya government, and showcase the opportunities that are there across various sectors. And we do the same here as well. So I'll give you an example. Just this past early March, just before COVID hit us, we had a delegation of 9 companies visiting from the US, state of Illinois, spread across health. There was health, there was FMCG, engineering, construction. And what were these companies looking for? They were looking for partnerships with local Kenyan companies to get into the Kenyan market. So they were looking for either distributors or agencies for or representatives for their products or services. And then two, we're also looking for opportunities for joint venture engagements with their local Kenyan counterparts. And our work really is to profile Kenyan companies and match them to these American companies that are looking for partners. And then it becomes a commercial conversation and a commercial engagement beyond that. And we really try to keep track as much as possible to see how that is faring on. So that's one bucket that we're looking at. And that is in two parts, you know, that direct market linkages, and then of course, talking up and promoting Kenya as an investment destination. Then the other piece is a little softer and is relating more to policy work, and that a trade agreement like this will come with policy considerations in there. And so the policy work, being able to bring American companies to the table together with Kenya government, together with even, you know, Kenyan companies as well, and advocate for favorable, if I may put it that way, investment operational climate, I think is key as well. And we've done this severally. We have a platform, you probably heard about it, the AmCham Business Summit, which is an annual platform that brings together, you know, both governments at a very high level, and as well, Kenyan companies, American companies, in one place to do primarily two things: policy advocacy, but more importantly, create that engagement from a B2B perspective that allows trade to happen and investment to also you know, get moving.
Guys, thank you so much for engaging us today. Maxwell and I have talked about even more on the free trade agreement in an article on the Kenyan Wall Street website. Thank you so much and have a lovely time. See you next episode. Goodbye.